Welcome to the Hour of Lateral Thinking, heard weekly from New York. I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The displaced playwright. Lateral thinking is sideways thinking. It unspools the mind.
It is not necessarily logical.
Its conclusions, if any, are unforeseen. As always, we will be joined by Chris Cerf, co-author with Henry Beard of Spenglish, and Encyclopedia Paranoica, and on his own, A Skunk in My Bunk, compulsive writer and songsmith David Finkel, Maggie Paley, author of More Than Just the Book of the Penis, and audio engineer and musical perpetrator Bob Auld, to discuss museums. Museums, is that the way they say it properly? Is the ballet and museums? I consider myself one of the most fortunate persons to have acquired, because I guess as a teenager, 14 and a half or 15, I was taking lessons at the Art Students League and thus acquired a student pass to the Museum of Modern Art, which was, if you can shrink in your mind the current Museum of Modern Art, about, I don't know, 90%. It becomes one of the most intimate and appealing museums of all times. And you could be the, and so it seemed, be the only one looking at it in there. It was concurrent with a period of time in New York City, the greatest of museum cities, where you could go to the Metropolitan Museum and it was pretty empty too. And you would often see artists with their easels set up, painting what they were looking at to practice. This doesn't happen very often anymore. You have to push people away to get to
grandfather,
see the art.
My grandfather used to be doing exactly that. He was at the Metropolitan Museum copying paintings.
And then what happened to him?
Well, he continued to do that all his life.
Go to the Metropolitan Museum to copy paintings.
Yes, but then he moved to New Jersey. Then he moved to New Jersey. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Then he went to copy paintings at the New Jersey Museum of Art, which I don't
Right.
That's suddenly a quick erection of a museum. So, David Dozer, you remember the museum now that they call it, that we used to call it the Modern, I think. Now they call it the MoMA. But do you remember that empty, wonderful Museum of Modern Art?
I remember the empty, wonderful Museum of Modern Art when I first came to New York to live in 1961. It was like a private club. There was hardly anybody there. It had fabulous paintings and history of art back in the whenever it was Cubism and Picasso and all those guys, and a lot of Dada art and really great stuff, and hardly anybody there. And it was within walking distance. I lived on 46th Street between 9th and 10th. It was a nice little walk over there to Fifth Avenue and 53rd. And then it changed. And my first experience with museums was in Pittsburgh. My father took me when I was 5 to the Carnegie Museum of Natural History, and I didn't know that there had been dinosaurs. And I didn't know that their skeletons were going to be in a room that I was about to walk into. And when I did, it was the worst day of my 5 years of life. I was scared to death, and I believe I burst into tears and started screaming and yelling. And I don't think my father ever took me to a museum after that again. That was it, my trip to the museum. And I'm still somewhat frightened of museums, I think. Certain natural history ones, I have to think, now, wait a minute, am I going to find something in here that's going to scare me? So art doesn't scare me, but nature does.
Right. So watch out before you go to... I remember that. I remember being taken in elementary school to the Museum of Natural History and seeing... I didn't know they had dinosaurs in Pittsburgh, to tell you the truth.
We had them, oh yeah.
It must have been all over, huh? Chris, do you remember being exposed to both the natural wonders and the artistic wonders of the world in New York City?
I do. I love the Natural History Museum. I was more a science freak than an art enthusiast when I was a kid, and I particularly loved the planetarium.
Ah, yes.
Because I still have astronomy as a big hobby, chase eclipses and have a telescope and all, and I loved going to every new show at the planetarium. That was a special thrill for me. But I loved the dinosaurs and the dioramas at the Natural History Museum. You could sort of go to any country in the world and see stuffed versions of the natural world, but they seemed very real to me.
They did. Do you remember?
But going? I did have nightmares occasionally about the dinosaurs, though, later on. Just after you saw those huge dinosaurs, the more people explained to me about how dangerous they were, the more scared I got in retrospect. But I loved seeing them in real time.
I thought that the biggest dinosaur that they displayed at the Museum of Natural History was a vegetarian dinosaur. Would that have been, I guess?
Yes, it would have been the Brontosaurus, which later they got renamed Apatosaurus, and now I just read has been named back Brontosaurus again.
Oh, good, that good, is, good.
So, full circle.
Good. So now, am I making this up, or was there actually a pterodactyl?
Yeah,
there was, and that was pretty scary.
Well, they would be. I think they hung them on wires from the ceiling.
Yeah,
they were flying dinosaurs.
Because they wanted it to look scary. Because I guess they were. And do you remember all the little tiny kids accompanying you in your class, and you had to hold hands and whatnot?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So cute, when you think back. David Finkel, what did you do? You were in not even as big a city as Pittsburgh. Where did you get to go to the museum?
I didn't go to museums very much. We had a museum from Trenton, and I lived only a few blocks from the museum, but it wasn't a very large museum. I just got interested in art, and so it wasn't really until I got to, prep school, we had a very fine museum. And I was friendly with the the head of the museum somehow.
What was it, a museum of art?
It was a museum of art, it was the art museum. And I knew one of the teachers somewhat well, and I knew the daughter of the president, the head of the museum. But it was really until I got to college that I was able to indulge myself, which I really did. You know, a liberal education is something of an indulgence. I was a history of art minor, so I took all of these courses, and we had we have wonderful museums in New Haven, and I spent a lot of time there and wrote about papers about all that stuff.
Which stuff?
Well, about my art, I had to write papers in my art courses.
Yes, and
I took modern art. I took a course my architecture course was with a man called Vincent Scully, who is quite well known as an architect professor.
I thought he was a sportscaster.
Yeah, well, not the same one, I presume.
He's 100. I think he was 100 yesterday or something recently.
That's Vin Scully. Vincent Scully
was a great baseball.
He was so great that he would he was once giving a lecture. And he was backing away from to get a longer look and let us all have a better look at the slide that was on. And he kept backing up and he fell off. And we weren't letting it happen. We just were so thrilled by what he was saying that we were missing what he was doing. That was Vincent Scully, one of the great professors of all time. And then when I graduated, I did the Grand Tour, which maybe many of us did. I went straight to Europe to see everything I'd studied, and did. So I was I immediately went to all the great museums, including, of course, the Louvre. I think we'll be talking about that later, and all through Italy, and looking at all the Caravaggios I could find, and the Veroneses, and the Tintorettos, and the Titians, of course, and I spend so much time in London now that I know the British Museum and the National Museum rather well, which includes my favorite portrait of all time by Titian. so I have a, I'm spend a lot of time in museums. I'll have more to say about it, but I've talked long enough for the moment.
Now, wait a minute. But have you noticed the amount of the sheer numbers of people that are in museums now, as opposed to when you first started looking at art? I don't know if this is a world, this is some kind of absolute truth, but it seems to me that everybody must go to a museum now and have to stand in front of the painting.
And take a selfie of themselves.
And take a selfie of themselves, yes.
Well, right. I think the most famous, I think the most famous selfie taken, and it's really annoying for those of us who really like art, is in the hall where the Mona Lisa is displayed in the Louvre. 100 people at the least
minimum
are standing in front of it and photographing themselves, standing, not looking at the Mona Lisa, but looking at the camera, so we can they can take their selfie of themselves being with the Mona Lisa. It's quite annoying because that room in the Louvre is full of some of the most magnificent art ever painted. And nobody's looking at anything but the Mona Lisa, and they're not even looking at the Mona Lisa.
No, they're not. It's hard to look at the Mona Lisa. It's all in glass. It's not.
Well,
all
no,
that
it's
easy.
Not that hard. It's hard to get near it.
Hard to get near it.
People fight you to keep you from coming to get a better, closer look because you want to see the painting and not the and the other and I will say one thing about the Mona Lisa, and then I'll shut up for the moment, which is that the Mona Lisa smile. If you look at all Leonardo da Vinci's other portraits, all the most of the figures have that same smile. So why the Mona Lisa smile?
She had a better PR agent, I guess.
It must have been her husband who commissioned the portrait. It was commissioned by her husband, as many of you may already know.
And he didn't. You think he started doing that same style before he painted this Mona Lisa, or just liked that smile so much he painted it?
No, I think that was his style. That was the way he painted. And actually, if you and Drew, if you look at a self-portrait of Da Vinci, you will see that it's very similar.
He has that same smile.
The proportions are very similar to the Mona Lisa.
The hairdo is different, though, completely, which
her hair had been done; his had not.
That's right. He let it go. Woo, wild. Yeah.
Speaking of that, Janet, I don't know. Going back to last week's topic, but Ernie Bushmiller as Nancy, of course, had a different hairdo than did the Mona Lisa. But the poet and artist Joe Brainard did a famous parody of the Mona Lisa with the Nancy, with Nancy as the face. And I recommend you look that up if you haven't seen it.
I will
it
look
is hysterical.
For it. I will look for it. And I think I'll get one to frame. It sounds ideal.
I'll send it to you. I have a copy back at my apartment, and I'll get it for you.
Oh, good, great.
Let's all get Nancy wigs and wear them sometime.
I'd love that. David and I have little Nancy and Sluggo, I guess you'd call them statues, aren't they? They're sort of mini statues.
Oh, I have one too.
You do?
I actually brought it with me to Easter Island and photographed it in front of one of the heads. Which was one of my favorite things that I ever did.
It's a brilliant thing to do. Did you take a selfie of you and the statues?
No, just Nancy and the
Easter Island art.
I've never been to a comic book museum, but they have to be. Aren't there comic book museums?
Well,
there must be.
I once saw a fantastic Art Spiegelman show at the Jewish Museum, and certainly great artists, great cartoon artists, have been displayed at museums.
The Society of Illustrators on East 63rd Street, Manhattan, has wonderful comic book shows quite often, and other commercial art. It's a great place to visit. Has a great restaurant too, which is open to the public. So
the secondary conversation.
Highly recommend that place to anyone.
Right. The secondary conversation museum restaurants. Okay, we'll catch that address.
Oh, we'll get to
right
that
after this. Right after this, see if you can recognize the singer of this particular song.
poetic, I'm so pathetic that I always abound at best. Instead of getting them off my chest, to let them rest unexpressed. I hate parading my serenading, as I probably miss a ball. But if this ditty is not so pretty, at least it'll tell you how great you are. You're the top, you're the Colosseum. You're the top, you're the Louvre Museum. You're a melody from a symphony by Strauss. You're a Bendel bonnet, a Shakespeare sonnet. You're Mickey Mouse. You're the Nile, you're the Tower of Pisa. You're the smile on the Mona Lisa. I'm a worthless check, a total wreck, a flop. But if, baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top. You're the top. You're Mahatma Gandhi. You're the top. You're Napoleon Brandy. You're the purple light of a summer night in Spain. You're the National Gallery. You're Garbo's salary. You're cellophane. You're sublime. You're a turkey dinner. You're the time of the Derby winner. I'm a toy balloon that's fainted soon to pop. But if, baby, I'm the bottom, you're the top. You're the top. You're an arrow collar. You're the top. You're a Coolidge scholar. You're the nimble tread of the feet of Fred Astaire. You're an O'Neill drama. You're Whistler's mama. You're Camembert. You're Repose, you're Inferno Dante, you're the nose on the great Durante. I'm just in the way, as the French would say, it's rot. But if maybe I'm the bottom, you're the top. You're the top. You're a Waldorf salad, you're the top. You're a Berlin ballad. You're the basic brand of a lady and a gent. You're an old Dutch master. You're Mrs. Astor. You're Pepsodent. You're romance. You're the steps of Russia. You're the pan on a Roxy Usher. I'm a lazy lout who's just about to stop. But if maybe I'm the bottom, you're the top.
Now, that is fantastic, isn't it? This is the sleight of hand of audio perpetrator. I forget the name. Audio genius. Bob Auld, that is really the singer, whom I leave yet open for everyone to guess who it is, and an old-time orchestrator called Vince Giordano. That is, well, can you describe what Vince Giordano does? He does period music, Bob?
Well, he is latter day. He's right around now.
Oh, he is. He's
but
still
he plays music of the 1920s and 30s, mm-hmm. and he plays it completely authentically with his band.
The way they would then. Okay, yeah. We have a guess.
And what they did is that they overdubbed their orchestra on this original recording. May I mention who it is?
The singer? I thought everyone would guess. Let's see if anyone knows.
Well, we know because you told us earlier.
Oh, that's right. I told you earlier. Okay, so everyone knows. So you tell us, Bob.
Yes. So this is an original recording made in the 30s of Cole Porter playing the piano and singing.
Singing himself.
And they overdubbed the orchestra over the whole tune, but I found that I liked hearing the words, especially in the beginning of the tune, more clearly with just the piano. So I just switched to the overdub about two-thirds of the way through.
Now, I didn't realize there were so many museum artistic references in You're the Top. I mean, at least four, and this is just one version of it. I knew he had the Louvre in there, and I knew he had the Mona Lisa, but I didn't quite realize he had You're a Dutch master.
And the National Gallery is
in there. National Gallery, yeah. And Whistler's Mama.
Yeah. Well, I think that's because we don't always hear the late verses. People
that's
don't
right.
always do the whole song.
Right. That's so, right. We just think
you're, fun to hear it all.
You're Mickey Mouse and you're cellophane. And you wonder, what's that? Well, that was a big
thing. An arrow color. That's a wonderful reference.
What's that?
An arrow color.
An arrow color. Yes. That was kind of astonishing, wasn't it? That's almost art. Because there used to be those arrow colors.
But it was Arrow was a shirt brand, actually.
That's right, a brand of a shirt.
Arrow shirts.
With a sharp, sharp shooter collar. So, Master. Yes, Maggie, did you have a vivid early memory of being in a museum?
Yes. Yes, my father used to take me very early to the Museum of Modern Art. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking at Hide and Seek.
Yeah,
which
right.
I can't remember what artist.
Chelchu.
Who is the artist?
Chelchu. Peter Chelchu.
Chelchu?
He was a Russian. Yeah. And I forget what you call that
really?
Kind of art.
Chelchu?
Yes, that was a T-S-T. I mean, I also used to stand in front of that painting, which was called, I think, Tree of Life. And it had embedded in it. It was this vast tree. But if you looked at it really closely, it had little people in the tree and other stuff in there. So it was a trompe d'oeil, right?
Trompe l'oeil?
A slate
called,
of eye.
We called it hide and seek. Hide and seek.
Hide and seek, I'm sorry.
Trompe
that's
l'oeil.
What it was. Yes. Hide and seek was the name of it.
Yes.
So very,
Yeah. And I also went to, of course, the Natural History Museum, of course, and I saw all the things that everyone else saw, the dioramas and the
Brontosaurus,
the skeleton bones,
and the pterodactyls, and the bones.
Yeah. So on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your dad took you. You were escorted by your father to both those joints. Or
well, no, I went to the Natural History Museum. I went to with my class, but my father took me to the Museum of Modern Art. I guess because his father was a painter.
Right. You could see him perhaps sitting in a corner room copying hide and seek. Although that would be a very hard, very difficult painting to imitate.
Right.
It was kind of extraordinary, though. It was about three stories tall, and a ground floor with a painting of the museum stairs hanging above those stairs. Do you remember that? The original.
The main stairs, yes. But
I can't remember. The main stairs. And it was only about three stories high.
I can't remember who the artist was.
I can't either, but it's still there. I think it's still above the whatever stairs, however you get up.
Well, now they have several flights of stairs.
Just a mess. It's so.
But I want to tell you that the artist of Hide and Seek was Chelachev, not Chelchu.
Whatever. It's a different.
Yeah.
I come from a different part of Russia, perhaps, than your family came from.
I won't ask you to spell it, Maggie.
It's spelled something like T-S-C-H, like czar, you know, only it's either ends in a E-W, right? Isn't that the way it ends?
Yes, it ends in E-W, I think. Yeah.
Chelchev, whatever. It's the same similar idea.
Yeah.
And it was kind of it was a trickster painting in a funny way. It wasn't anything like a Cezanne, but it certainly attracted all the onlookers and
the kids,
kids. Now, in that museum, same museum, David said it was like a club, right? David Ozer, you said the Museum of Modern Art was like a club in those days because no one was there except very people you could recognize as European and so forth. And there was a cafe that was modeled after, I think, a Viennese cafe. And it was, you could get sandwiches and they were like, I don't know, 45 cents. It wasn't deluxe dining, although I think they're might have been a better museum than that one I'm describing, a coffee shop, where you could just hang out all forever. Don't we miss having a museum as a club, and does anybody know one that we could go to now that we can almost go to museums again and they're not so full? No? Museums are not so full now because of they have to be at 25% capacity. So I would think now's the time to get going. Does anyone have any other favorites in later life? New York museums?
Well, I belong to the Frick.
Uh-huh.
And the Whitney.
Uh-huh.
And MoMA and the Met. Uh-huh. So I belong to several of the New York museums, and I'm there frequently, because when you belong, you can just drop by and go and look at one painting.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting that the Frick Museum, Mr. Frick was Andrew Carnegie's enforcer. He was not a nice man, but he accrued great wealth by being with Andrew Carnegie, and so he made a museum.
Henry Clay Frick.
Yes.
And he was from Pittsburgh, and there is a Frick Museum in Pittsburgh as well, which has many of his wonderful holdings.
Yeah.
And he died around 1919, somewhere in there, when his daughter, I think her name is Gladys. Is it Gladys? I can't remember now.
Gladys Frick. I'm just saying it over and over again.
Was he related to Ford Frick, the baseball commissioner?
She might have been. Yeah. I don't know. She might have been. And she acquired a lot of everything after his death. She continued to acquire a lot of wonderful things. And the Frick Museum they're all wonderful museums.
People had to be involved in them for them to be built at all. I mean, museums aren't created by paupers. Although that would be a very good museum, the Paupers Museum.
Well, the Museum of Modern Art, wasn't the Museum of Modern Art started by one of the Vanderbilts? Was it Gertrude Vanderbilt?
I think she was the Whitney.
She's the Whitney.
Yeah. And the Whitney, as a matter of fact, back in the days of actually being able to see the art, was connected to the MoMA, the Modern Museum. You could go for the price of getting in the MoMA, which I think was not very much, you could go through a corridor and get into the Whitney, which was also even emptier than the Museum of Modern Art. Does anybody have a kind of David? Do you know the Frick Museum, David Dozer from Pittsburgh? Or you have
Carnegie has three museums in Pittsburgh, and Frick has one. Yeah.
Who has which?
Andrew Carnegie. He's a huge library there, and also the Natural Museum and the Art Museum and some other museum.
And the Andy Warhol Museum is in Pittsburgh too, which is absolutely a wonderful thing to go see if you have a chance.
And that's because Andy Warhola is from Pittsburgh.
That's exactly where he came from.
That's where he developed his ambition to be more than a shoe illustrator.
Somewhere between Pittsburgh and New York, he lost the A in his name.
Yeah, he did.
Warhola. He was what, Polish? Is that
I think that's right.
Czech,
Mm-hmm. Polish.
Well, if you go further to the Midwest, you find Detroit, where I grew up, and the Detroit Institute of Arts is a well-known museum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And outside the cities, there's the Cranbrook Institute of Arts,
which is,
I think, on the old Scripps newspaper estate.
Was that what the Cranbrook School was?
Yeah, same place. It's beautiful grounds. I used to run with my cross-country team there.
Really? No, that's a fancy, nice art school where great artists develop. So we stayed once, I don't know if David will embellish on this place that we once stayed, Museum Hotel or the Hotel Museum in Amsterdam. So it looked out on a museum, and that's why they called it. Do you remember this room that we stayed in? Do you remember the view of that room?
Yeah, it was the museum across the street.
It was a museum across the street.
were there paintings in your room?
Not one.
Walls were totally blank.
No, but you could, you could create your own pictures because it was also, I think...
And go to the museum across the street where they had paintings all over the place.
That's right.
Yeah, all those guys.
They had the Rijks Museum. It had paintings by Rembrandt in particular. And when we were there...
Well, in
when we were there, they had also incorporated the Van Gogh Museum, or Van Gogh, if you prefer, into the Rijks Museum because they were fixing up the
that museum. It has all the great Dutch masters, doesn't it?
Has all the which one? Yeah. The Rijks.
The Rijks Museum. Or,
yeah, has the great has the Dutch masters Rijks that museum. Cole Porter so reverently wrote a lyric about. The guys with cigars.
I had a funny trip to see those. I was in the Soviet Union working on a TV special back in the 80s, and I got to be friends with a KGB guy that was assigned to me.
Cool.
And so we took a train from Moscow to Leningrad to go to the Hermitage. But the problem was that he had left, my KGB friend, had left only half an hour for the whole tour of the museum. But he decided that I needed to see everything. So we kind of just started racing through the museum, and I couldn't keep up with him, and I kept wanting to stop and look at things. No time, Chris. No time, Chris. So I just looked at all the walls and saw that there were paintings there and left. It was the greatest lost opportunity of any museum trip I ever had.
But you were in Leningrad, but if you went now to that museum, you'd be in St. Petersburg.
That's correct.
Did you ever see, do you remember the movie now? I can't remember the filmmaker. He's a great Russian filmmaker. It's about the Hermitage. It's about, I think, Catherine the Great, and it's made on a single camera roll, on a rolling camera. It goes right through the Hermitage. You might see what you missed if you go see that movie, you know? Yeah, quite sensational, really. It's amazing that they haven't made more movies of, you know, walking through museums, museums of the world.
Although there have been some famous scenes in museums. Brian De Palma's Blowout, I think, has a famous museum scene.
And of course, there is a famous scene in a museum with Alan Arkin and Barbara Harris called the museum scene, in which Alan Arkin plays a beatnik guitar player and Barbara Harris plays a naive Chicago person who is wowed by the beatnikiness of Alan Arkin. Now,
Alfred Hitchcock's film Blackmail, the British Museum plays a major part. There are scenes filmed in it that are quite spectacular.
Was that Blowout or Blow Up?
No, Blackmail.
No,
Blow
Up. Talking Hitchcock. About the Finkel reference.
No, Blow Up is...
Didn't that have stuff too? Photography.
He was a photographer. I don't know that we ever were the main character.
Antonioni.
Is that Antonioni? Yeah.
I think
Antonioni.
Yeah. Great movie. Yeah. Great.
It's a great movie, but then Brian De Palma did a kind of spin on it in his way and called it Blowout.
Well,
I may be wrong about that.
Here's another old master.
I was a stranger in the city, out of town where the people I knew. I had that feeling of self-pity. What to do, what to do, what to do? The outlook was decidedly blue. But as I walked through the foggy streets alone, it turned out to be the luckiest day I've known. A foggy day in London town had me low and had me down. I viewed the morning with alarm. The British Museum had lost his charm. How long I wondered, could this thing last? But the age of miracles hadn't passed. Yes, for suddenly, baby, I saw you there. Through the fog in London town, the sun was shining everywhere.
A foggy day in London town had me low and it had me down. I viewed the morning with alarm. The British Museum had lost its charm. How long I wondered, could this thing last? But the age of miracles hadn't passed. For suddenly I saw you there, and through foggy London town, the sun was shining. Two masters, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, and the other master, which is, who wrote that song again? Oh, the Gershwins.
George and Ira Gershwin.
The Gershwins. And they got the British Museum in there, lost, losing its charm. God, how witty.
Which it hasn't.
It hasn't lost its charm. It hasn't had
no.
to. It hasn't had
no.
to. did you ever go to, I mean, is there a Jackson Pollock Museum in, say, anywhere near you are in Long Island, Chris?
Well, there is, his house is basically a museum.
It is? Does it have
paintings? They've opened it up. It has paintings and sort of a retrospective of his life as well. And they give lectures and tours there. It's quite cool. Recommend it.
I recommend it too.
Is it only his paintings or are Lee?
Lee's are there paintings? Too. Hers are there
yes,
too.
Both of them. So, but there are all over, say, France, there are tiny little museums that pay homage to the great masters because they lived all over that countryside or whatever. I don't know, like Van Gogh, but Picasso. Well, actually, in Barcelona, there's a museum of Picasso as a kid. You know, Picasso's earliest stuff, the stuff his father said, I'm putting down my brush because this kid's got, you know, so much more than I have, and let the little boy be the painter. And what's that other one? The Matisse Chapel, you know, where you just have nothing but Matisse in all his glory. And
I can tell you, I went more than once, actually, to Auvers-sur-Oise, which is north of Paris by 20 or 30 miles, and it's where Van Gogh spent his last several months. And the whole town, in a way, is a museum, because if you go by parts of the town that he painted, there is there will be a placard in front of the building and that will say what was painted there, and it'll be a reproduction.
George Washington slept here.
And then I also went to the apartment where he was living and where he died, and that's also open to the public. So you can go up to the little room, the cell where he, after he shot himself, where he spent the next couple of days dying, which is not, I guess it's not really an uplifting place.
Not really.
But it's something, but if you love him, it's, for me, it was worth going to.
Yeah, authors have museums and things like that too.
Yes.
A big thrill for me was going to Roanoke, which was Faulkner's house in Oxford, Mississippi.
And wow.
You can he actually outlined some of his books on the walls of the house. And they've left that there. It's incredible to see.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
On the walls, not on paper on the walls?
No, on the wall, literally on the wall of his bedroom.
That's,
I think it was the Hamlet that is still there and that I saw outlined there when I went.
Oh, man, that's the way to go, writers. Get to your wall.
Yeah.
He also had
phone numbers all over his kitchen wall. And I looked for my dad's number since he was his publisher, but I didn't find it.
Oh, no, that's so fun. And in Dublin, there's a James Joyce Museum, and it has, I think it has in it the original door to 7 Eccles Street, where the Blooms, where Leopold and Molly Bloom live. There's a door. It actually was a place in Joyce's Dublin, and they have, I can't remember other stuff. Oh, I guess manuscript pages and portraits of the artist. And I remember we were there to be in a show, a Richard Maxwell play, and so the whole company was in Dublin, and we were playing in the bohemian part of the city. And the next day one of the next days after a show, I went to the Joyce Museum, and there was a guy who was tending the Joyce Museum had gone to the theater the night before and seen our play. So I'm thinking, this is so Dublin-esque, to go, everybody knows everything that's going on in the city, and they all, of course, pay homage to James Joyce. And there was also in there, in that city, a transplanted workshop room space of Francis Bacon. They had moved the room, his workshop where he painted, to Dublin, where he's born, from England, where he lived and worked.
They didn't replicate it. They moved the room.
They set it up exactly. It was the messiest. It was so incredibly messy. Stuff all over the floor, flying pencils and everything. And it was behind glass. And you thought, maybe if I keep up with my own mess.
Speaking of messy and artists, Michael O'Johnny, who when he was on National Lampoon, had postcards made of the floor of the Sistine Chapel, which was just tiles with garbage lying around and old wrappers. And he tried selling them, but I don't think he sold a whole lot.
Well, one of my favorite museums is in Las Vegas, and I'm not sure it's still there, but it's the Liberace Museum.
Oh, gosh, I loved it, too.
Because they had his pianos, and they had his capes.
It was just an
apotheosis of kitsch.
Oh, man.
What I remember about it, I don't know if you remember this, David, was that he had letters on the wall that very famous people had written to him, like the Queen and things, except they weren't very flattering quite often. They said things like, "I'm sorry you can't come and visit me at Buckingham Palace," signed Summer Sisters of the Green, but that was there on the wall, along with everything else.
What did it imply that we wouldn't let you in?
Yeah, I've done that. But it was on the Buckingham Palace stationery, so it got on the museum wall. And they had a great gift shop, too. I remember buying lots of piano-shaped soap there, which kind of smelled awful. It smelled up my room when I got home.
Museum gift shops are all a special place.
Yeah, yeah, they're really
the Museum
good.
Of Modern Art is all great design.
Oh, you bet.
And if you're a member, you get 20% or I think it's 10% or 20% off your purchases. 20%.
Often 20.
It's a great source of Christmas gifts for sure.
It really is, and the Met has a great
Christmas cards.
Too. Yeah,
almost all museums in New York City, at least, have excellent. Gift shops, you know, whoever imitates the and original stuff too, you know, like
some people just go to the gift shop and never go into the museum.
Right? Who needs it? Too crowded with people looking at art. The gift shop less crowded. And now, okay, since the woman has been mentioned so many times, I think we should hear the tune about the most famous person in all museums. Here she is now.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with the mystic smile. Is it only 'cause you're lonely they have blamed you for that Mona Lisa strangeness in your smile? Do you smile to tempt the lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been dropped at your doorstep, and they just lie there, and they dry there. Are you warm? Are you real, Mona Lisa, or just a cold and lonely, lovely world of art? Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Are you warm? Are you real, Mona Lisa? Or just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art?
That was a surprise to not hear Nat King Cole sing that. That was, there's only, I think, one other person who would dare to sing that song is Willie Nelson. So beautiful. And when we talked about Mad Comics, was there any fabulous stuff with regard to the Mona Lisa? Who was the first person to put a mustache on the Mona Lisa?
I don't know, but I think you're right. I think Mad Magazine did a lot of art parodies.
It sounds like a...
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Is it Marcel
Duchamp? Yeah.
Marcel Duchamp did it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mentioned Joe Brainard earlier, who did wonderful parodies of art, all with Nancy and Sluggo. A wonderful
Get collection. Me connected. This is
he was a
favorite.
Wonderful poet, too, but he was a fine artist, and he loved doing that. He has... dozens of Nancy's. I think you can find them online and highly recommend them.
I will.
The best one was Nude Descending a Staircase, which has hundreds of little Nancy heads thrown in.
I've written a lot of fiction. I realize, I hadn't thought about this, but I realize a lot of my fiction is set in museums, because I guess I spent a lot of time there. But there is a short story of mine in which a fellow was walking across the Solferino Bridge near the pedestrian bridge in Paris, near the Louvre, and he sees a woman sitting there that he is sure that looks exactly like the Mona Lisa. And he's staring at her, and she says to him, "I know you're looking at me," and he tries to pretend that he isn't. And she says, "Look, people have been looking at me for 500 years. I know what I'm being looked at." And so he sits down and he tries to get her to smile, and he tries all sorts of things, and eventually he does. But I love setting pieces in museums.
Fine idea.
Yeah. Now, getting back to Marcel Duchamp and those Dadas, I'm going to ask David Dozer, since when I met him, he was very infatuated, and still is, I guess, because when you get infatuated with some artist, art movement as a kid, it kind of remains with you. Had you seen any of the Duchamps or any of the Dada artists that you admired or did you read about them first?
I read about them. But there's a big book called, it's blue and white, and it says Dada on it, and it's from the 1950s or something, and I still have it, and it's the history of Dada. Switzerland, mm-hmm. Paris, London, you know, all the art shows, the 1912, so forth. The Mona Lisa was actually brought on a ship in its own stateroom across the ocean to New York back in 1962. At a time, oh, really? I was a satirist in something called The Premise. And in Time magazine, they quoted me as the actor in The Premise who did a routine about the galley on this ship receiving an order for Chianti and Mona. Anyway. That was my the only joke I ever had in Time magazine.
Remember, that was about the time when they brought the Pietà over for the World's Fair, and a man named Les Toth, I think, smashed it.
Right,
famously.
Right.
And then Don Novello wrote a book with of letters called the Laszlo Letters, named after Laszlo Toth, which were all angry letters that he had written as a joke to a different company.
I remember that. The Laszlo letters, yes. Outraged customers. So, and no one has ever been to Cooperstown, to that museum?
Oh, I've been there, for sure.
You have been, huh?
Oh, it was great. Real fun.
And what about the Nashville one? Isn't there a...
I've been there, too.
Bluegrass Museum? Yeah. I mean, what is it?
Sun Records has opened their old studio as a museum, and you can go see where
Sun Records,
Elvis and Carl Perkins and everybody recorded it.
Was Sun Records based in Nashville?
Was it Memphis? You're right. It's in Memphis.
I thought it was Memphis.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. It's Memphis. But still, we're going to.
But that was a great studio. Out of the Sun Records came some mighty fine
you
stuff.
Got Roy Orbison, too.
Right.
Oh. Roy Orbison. So how great was he? Yeah.
If we had our way, if we could find a Frick or a Carnegie or something and want and say, can you put up the dough for a museum? Does anybody have a dream museum? Something you'd like to, some collection of stuff?
I would have said rock and roll, but there is a rock and roll museum. Right. I've there just is. Never been there.
Where is it?
I've been there too, in Cleveland.
Oh, really?
That's worth a visit, too, if you're a rock fan, which I certainly am, and I have a hunch David is as well.
I'm a huge
me
rock
too.
Fan.
That's a great visit.
So, and Bob All, do you want to have a museum of, I don't know, Detroit have a museum of moving cars?
Well, Detroit does have something that Rockefeller Center doesn't have, and that's original murals by Diego Rivera.
Oh, you said it. That's right. Is it in a post office? Is that where they keep? Is that where they keep them? Post offices used to and still do.
No, I think Rockefeller Center. They painted them over.
No, really? They destroyed them. They broke the hell out of them. And they just smashed them to smithereens.
Really?
Why? Because they were communist murals. Oh. Diego Rivera's murals were smashed by the Rockefellers because they had Lenin in them. You've been listening to the Hour of Lateral Thinking. On this show, you heard us with Chris Cerf, David Finkel, and Maggie Paley discuss museums.
This program originates from five neighborhoods in New York.
In one of them, our audio engineer and musical perpetrator is Bob Ald, with special thanks to Cole Porter, Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong, and Willie Nelson. And you can email us at catradiocafe@gmail.com. I'm Janet Coleman.
I'm David Dozer.
The Displaced Playwright.
This has been a production of Cat Radio Cafe.
The feline's favorite radio empire.
And remember our slogan.
The only museum that intrigues a cat is the Museum of Rodents.